If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here at Inside the Ropes. My name is Kerry McIntosh, and yes, I have the cold slash flu, and I sound horrendous. I don't feel physically as bad, but nothing gets me out of bed in the morning and gets me going for the day than the idea of sitting down and talking wrestling with the king of the Power Slam, Finn Martin, and that's what I'm here to do today. And I feel rejuvenated. I feel woke being able to talk to Finn. Hi, Finn. How are you?
Well, I'm better than you by the sound of things, Kenny. What's happening to the Inside the Ropes team? You know, I'm the only one who's healthy.
I know, and you know, you're in your early 60s. You think you'd be falling apart by now, but you know, you're managing to keep it together.
I'll tell you, us octogenarians.
You're not that bad yet.
When you keep yourself in shape, you can still do this when you're in your 80s.
Yeah, well, that's the good thing about our job, right? Is that, well, I mean, some parts of my job and the stress level, which I'll one day go into, maybe I couldn't do into my 80s. But, you know, we can talk about wrestling for as long as we want to.
Exactly. Absolutely.
I do want to give a quick shout out to Sandra. And just, you know, she probably would never say this, but I'm just going to say it on her behalf because I know she wouldn't mind. Sandra lives in the States, and the healthcare system over there is horrendous. And it's so bad that she has, in recent years, not been able to afford to have healthcare. And she's got some sort of viral infection, which, you know, she thought might be strep throat or something. But anyway, I want to just put this across to show how lucky we are in the UK, in that she went to the doctors the other day, like a kind of, you know, a walk-in clinic, to see about the issue that she had. And she had to spend $145 just to get seen. And and that's without really, you know, them knowing specifically what's wrong and treating it. So I think when you see things like that, you kind of go, something's not right, and it really should be rectified. And we're pretty lucky over here to have a healthcare system where people aren't kind of driven under financially just to make sure they're healthy. So, but I hope that Sandra, I spoke to her last night, well, on DM, not, you know, on voice, but she seems to be on the mend. She feels a little bit better. She's taken everything, you know, throat sweets and painkillers and everything to try and get better. So I'm hoping that she'll be back with us over the weekend. But I'm sure you echo my sentiments, Finn, that our well wishes go out to Sandra.
Of course they do. And here on our NHS versus the American system. I mean, it's like in the UK, we don't realise how lucky we are sometimes.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things, because I've got, you know, we've both got a lot of American friends and people we speak to and all that kind of stuff. And the thing that I always kind of, you know, you get to say, well, America's the greatest country on earth. And I've heard it go, well, you know, you can't give everybody healthcare. Then, you know, to me, you're definitely number two or below, you know. So hopefully they can get it done, though, at some point. Yeah. But
we all know that Scotland is the greatest country in the world, don't we, Kenny?
Well, I mean, if you want to live a very rich life and die in your early 50s, Scotland is the place for you. And I should say this while we're on the subject. Did you know, Finn, that yesterday, I'm going to pull up the article here while we're on the phone, Time Out magazine did a poll, or an article, on the greatest cities in the world. The 48 best cities in the world in 2019, they surveyed 34,000 people, Time Out did, and number 8 in the 48 best cities in the world was Glasgow, Scotland.
Wow.
There you go. I'm going to give you the top 10. I'm going to actually send this to you as well, Finn, so you can have a swatch at it while we're here on the phone. But yeah, so I'll give you the top 10. The top 10 cities were, number 10 was Tokyo. Number 9 is Paris. Number 8 is Glasgow. Number 7 is Berlin. Number 6 is Montreal. Number 5 is LA. 4 is London. 3 is Chicago. 2 is Melbourne. And number 1 is New York. So there you go.
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
You were trying to make a pithy wee joke at Scotland's expense there, and there we are in the top 10 fighting it out. With although I do I've never been to Tokyo, but I don't know if I'd say Glasgow is better than Tokyo. Like, you know.
I understand now New York's number one, but like, Chicago, correct me if I'm wrong, they've had a few problems there, right? They've had a few problems there.
They have.
So, yeah.
But I guess the good pizza slice makes up for it in Chicago, I guess.
Yeah. London's had a few problems as well. Obviously, I'm not making light of any of this. But it's like, yeah. There was actually a survey I read a couple of years ago on our country, the UK, and it said the best place to live in the UK was Kendal, Cumbria.
Oh, fuck
off. My hometown. It was my hometown.
You better send me that article. I don't trust you. You better send me that. We should say number 15 on the list was Manchester. I'm just trying to see if there's any other UK cities that are in there that we can, you know, at least kind of say that we... None from Ireland yet, which I'm surprised at. I thought Ireland had got a shout in there at some point. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. No offence to any listeners here. Birmingham is in here. Birmingham, England.
Well, have you been to the Birmingham New Street train station lately? It's absolutely stunning.
The fact that that's your biggest sell for me. But have you been to the train station? They've got a great Greggs. we've got number 25 is Dublin. So Dublin is on there. So, if you just Google time out best cities in the world, you can have a look at what they say about each place. So, what we've covered, Sondra, we've covered Glasgow being a good city, we've covered you getting Cumbria in there somehow.
Exactly. Well, somebody's got to. You know, I watch that show Gogglebox, right, each Friday. And they have people on from all over the country, all over our nation. There's never any Cumbrians on there. Never. Justice for Cumbrians. That's what I say.
There you go. Well, I do also want to say, because this is the first podcast I've been on since before the Gold Dust Tour, the Dustin Rhodes Tour. And, there was no interview cast this week. It will be back next week. I've got some good ones lined up and lead up to WrestleMania. But you, Finn, got to attend the Gold Dust Tour, and you also got a chance, I guess we can say it, you got a chance to speak to him, which is going to be on Patreon soon. Any takeaways for the listeners about Dustin and his story that he told?
There was a lot of stories he told during the tour, which we don't really need to talk about on this podcast.
Right, okay.
But it was, I really, as I wrote on my Facebook page, I really enjoyed the tour. I thought he just seemed like he was very comfortable about where he is right now in life. And he was saying he's like, he obviously had a lot of drink and drug problems, late 90s and much of the 2000s. But as he said, he's been like sober now for, I think he said, 11 years. So he just seems like he's in a good place. He seems really content with where he's at in life and with his position in wrestling history. And it's so nice to see a veteran say things like that. It's really uplifting because obviously there's lots of bitterness out there from certain people who are either in the business or no longer in the business. And he just seemed to me like he was somebody that, as he said during the tour, he never became world champion. It was something that he wanted to do, but he became intercontinental champion, US champion, tag team champion. And that was good enough for him. As I said to you when we did our interview, I thought Goldust was going to be a career killer. I absolutely thought for sure he was finished when he became that character in 95. And he not only survived it, it became all these different versions. There was all these incarnations of Goldust. And he did make it a success. And he's still playing that character, well, to this day, obviously on the tour. So here we are, like 23 years later, and he's still that character. So I really enjoyed the tour. I really enjoyed meeting him. I really enjoyed doing the interview with him, which, as you said, will be on Patreon later this month. I thought it was a really good tour. And I think for those who didn't go to it, I think you really missed out there.
It's funny because when he was coming over, I had like a preconception. I knew he'd be a nice guy. Like, I knew he would be a nice guy, but I think that I thought that he was going to take himself a lot more seriously than he did. And not that I thought he was going to be, you know, he wouldn't go into detail about stuff, but like, so something that I had done privately is I'd said when we set up, I was like, you know, I'm going to have to ask you about Black Rain, you know, every night. Like, I can't not cover that because then it feels like I'm hiding something from, you know, doing a 90-minute show. And he was totally fine with it. But when he got over, he was very much like, you know, is this okay? Are we doing all right? He was very like, he was very committed to trying to make it good. I mean, I think one of the things that early on he was, you know, it's hard for some wrestlers to figure out that people aren't expecting a comedy show. Like, bits will be funny, but you're not. It's not a stand-up show. And once he kind of got that, he ended up becoming funnier because he wasn't thinking about it. You know, I think he was sometimes going, oh, they didn't laugh at that story. Well, but it wasn't a funny story. It was an engaging story where people were listening to it. And a lot of times, you know, you've been at these shows as well, Finn, a lot of times people are enthralled in a story, so they just don't say anything. Doesn't mean they're not enjoying it. It just means that they're actually really engaged.
Well, I would have said the fact that they're not speaking, not murmuring and not talking amongst themselves is the greatest praise you could receive at an event like that. You should be seeking stone silence as you're talking. If you get stone silence once you finish talking, well, then there's a problem. But when people are listening really attentively, that proves that, yeah, you've got them. You've got them engaged and they're really interested in what you're saying.
And I think one of the takeaways I got from the tour, because obviously every night we're talking about his career and different parts of it, and I'm moving questions about and changing different things up. And the thing that I walked away with that I didn't really think about before was there's a few times in his career where he's really shown up and performed and they've dropped the ball with him. And, you know, whether it's him and Cody winning the titles at Battleground and then them having to lose the belts unceremoniously to the New Age Outlaws when they were a hot act. Or him, you know, being the side act to Booker T and being one of the most over stars on Raw in late 2002, early 2003. There's various points where he was, I think, ready to do more stuff, and they didn't. They always seemed with Goldust to go far with him for a while and then just kind of drop it. And there were some stages where that was his fault because he had too much, you know, his own issues going on. But I think I walked away from it with a bit of a newfound respect for some of the character stuff that he did that I think he maybe deserved a little bit more from. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you look back on a lot of it and a lot of it was in bad taste at the time, or at least it felt like it was. But, you know, his comments on the show I saw in Manchester was saying, just heard from all these different people. I mean, you know, you really look at it, you look at what the Goldust character was, and there were times, you know, when he did things and it wasn't really anything that was going to empower anyone, if you know what I mean, Kenny. But it was really nice to hear him say that in the final analysis, looking back on it, the character did really help a lot of people. And I would never have anticipated that either. You know, I mean, it was the character definitely at times, certainly in 95, 96, was really designed to get the worst kind of heat, I thought. Would you agree with that, Kenny?
Yeah, 100%.
But it was really nice to hear him say that lots of people took great strength from that character. And you think, well, maybe I obviously wasn't viewing it through their eyes, but they saw the character as something that really empowered them. So you look back on it and think, you know what? It actually was something that was very helpful to people, and it causes you to change your opinion of things. You know, just because you think you're right, and this is something that old age has taught me, Kenny, now I'm in my 80s, is that just because you think you're right, it doesn't mean you are. And, like, you know, you can have an opinion about something, but years later you can realise, you know, you can discover that you were quite wrong about something. And I think that's a very good thing for us as human beings, to have that self-awareness, to look back and say, you know what, I was damn wrong about that. I was absolutely wrong about my thought process at the time on a certain thing. And not just wrestling, lots of things. I mean, everything in life, truthfully. I really enjoyed the Goldust show because I felt he was so candid. And just seemed so relaxed and comfortable, really talking about everything. As you said, I know he didn't really want to talk about the Black Reign stuff, but he did do. He talked about his problems. He talked about TNA. He was not happy there at all. I know he wasn't happy where he was in life, but he wasn't happy with TNA either, as he made very clear. So, I mean, it was really interesting to hear him talk about all these different things, you know, in such a refreshingly honest way. And I'm not saying other shows I've been to, the interviewees have been dishonest, because I'm sure they haven't been. But it's just some people are willing to talk about a lot more than others. I think that's fair to say, isn't it, Kenny?
Yeah, no, that definitely is. I do want to share one very quick thing that I just found. It was so funny, and for the rest of the tour, it made me laugh. So Finn comes to the Manchester show, and I was speaking to him afterwards, and, you know, you'd said, you know, you were quite surprised at how open he was, and that made the show enjoyable and all that kind of stuff. And then we went back, and you met Dustin, and we kind of had a quick chat, and we had a laugh for about 5 minutes. And there was one point where, so Dustin is consistently, when you're around him, he wants to bust your balls and muck around all the time. He's never serious. To a point where, like, he'll do it and then I'll kind of, you know, snap and he'll start laughing because he's got me. You know, that's kind of the way. And it's, you know, he's a very funny guy, good nature. So anyway, so Finn's in. I said, oh, Finn had run Power Slam magazine. And Dustin immediately just said to Finn, so how did I do? You know, how did I do? And Finn, oh, you know, really, really well. And he went, really? And you went, you did fairly well. And every time he would ask Finn, Finn would be a little bit more honest about how he had done. And my favourite bit was, as Finn's leaving, and Dustin shouts, so Finn, how many stars did I get out of five? And your response, I don't know if you remember your response, Finn, but it will never leave me. It was the best thing ever. Finn just turns round and says, well, Dustin, 4.9, because, you know, there's always room for improvement. And you walked out. And it was just the best thing. That was your response. 4.9, there's always room for improvement. And I thought, you know, that was like a mic drop. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So give me some laughs for the next couple of days with that one. So, we should move on to the world of wrestling. Now, we usually on this podcast would cover the pay-per-view, but with Sondra being off, Finn stepped in on Patreon. So we reviewed Fastlane over on Patreon. Do you want to just kind of, I guess, for the people who are not on Patreon, and if you're not, why are you not? Patreon.com/InsideRopes, where you can get this podcast 24 hours early, an overrun where we talk about other stuff. But if people are not subscribed, can you give us a kind of summary sentence or two of overall what you thought of Fastlane?
I'm not sure if I can do that in a small number of words, Kenny. We're going to be here for a long time. I mean, I think there was some good matches there. I felt the show just ran a bit long, but I thought the opening match and the main event were really good. There was a lot of storyline advancements there. I think it was a show that was an important show. I think we came to the conclusion that it was a show that will be remembered. And, you know, when it's the show that's just before WrestleMania, often it's a show that just kind of gets a bit lost, because sometimes Fastlane seems a bit irrelevant, doesn't it? It's like, well, why are you even doing this? You've had Elimination Chamber. Do we really need another pay-per-view before WrestleMania? And I think it's been like that in prior years. But I think this year, WWE delivered a lot of Fastlane. Probably there was too many matches, so the show did drag a bit. But I felt there was some good matches there and lots of storyline advancement. So, I mean, overall, I thought it was a pretty good show. If you haven't watched it, I think you should watch it, or at least you should watch parts of it. Definitely the opening match, definitely the main event. And I thought also, I think another match that we really put over on the podcast was the four-way between Samoa Joe, R-Truth,
Rey Mysterio and Andrade.
That was really, I mean, the crowd is sort of, I think after the angle at the end of the Shane McMahon and Miz versus Usos match, I think the crowd sort of wore him out a bit, really, that match, because it delivered so much and it took a while for them to really get back up. But they came alive again in that four-way match. I thought that was really well done. I thought Samoa Joe had a really good night there, and he's somebody who's really clicking right now. He's really doing well for himself. So good for him. I hope he has a good match at WrestleMania as well and keeps it going. I think overall it was a pretty good show.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's a thumbs up show. But I do want, before we go on to the fallout from Raw and SmackDown, touch on a couple of tiny news notes. Now, Jim Cornette is now not full-time, but basically a regular commentator for MLW. And I just wanted to kind of get your take on bringing in somebody like Cornette, who obviously is very old school, but, you know, having him around back, he can work with younger talents. He had that run in ROH a few years ago. What do you think of the idea of bringing in somebody like a Cornette as a commentator, who comes from a completely different generation? You know, so he's maybe going to overshine, you know, I think it's Ian Riccoboni who's the commentator there. I think I've got that right. I don't know. But anyway, what do you think about the idea of bringing in Cornette as a commentator for MLW and having him kind of around to work with younger guys?
Well, I mean, that to me is Cornette's strength. He's somebody who does work well with younger talent. And there's lots of things that he can do in a backstage capacity to really help any promotion. As a commentator, I mean, he's been doing commentary. I think probably the first time I heard him doing commentary would have been, did he do commentary for WCW? He did do. I always remember he did commentary on a Clash of the Champions special. I think it was the one, you could look this up for us. I think it was Clash of the Champions 10, Kenny. You could look this up. I think it was there was a match between Cactus Jack and Mil Mascaras on the show. I think it was somewhere in Texas. Could you look that one up, Kenny, while I'm speaking?
I am looking it up right now as we speak. Clash of the Champions 10, Texas Shootout in Corpus Christi, Texas. And yeah, I think that was the one he was the commentator on.
Wow, what a memory. I've still got it, Kenny, even though I'm now in my 90s.
It's going up. You're like Hogan. It's going up a 1,000 every time you talk.
So, I mean, he's been doing commentary for a very long time. I mean, obviously knows the business better than most of us ever will. I mean, he's really good at communicating. He's obviously really good on podcasts. I think at times he plays a character on podcasts. You know, I think a lot of the times he's saying stuff to get a response. I'm not sure if the things he says he really believes or he just turns it up a bit to be controversial. But I mean, as a commentator, he's somebody that can bring a lot to any broadcast. Obviously commentated for WWF, commentated for OVW when he was running that company, did some stuff for TNA when he was there. So he actually commentated on the famous LPWA Super Ladies Showdown. Could have been the first women's pay-per-view, that. Could have been the first all-women's pay-per-view, in the States at least. Best to my knowledge, I think it was.
Oh, I mean, Finn, come on. The first all-women's pay-per-view in the States was Evolution.
Oh,
WWE. So,
of course, not LPWA Super Ladies Showdown from... Was it 91 or 92? I think it was 92. And I'm pretty sure that Cornette commentated on that, and he was really good on that. So he's obviously got lots to contribute. And yeah, he does have, you could say he's got an old school mentality, but he keeps up with the business as well, so he knows what's going on. So I haven't heard any of his commentary yet for MLW. It's something that we should both listen to, I think, Kenny, before we comment any further on whether or not he's any good. But I imagine he probably will be.
Yeah, we should 100%. I did hear, I can't remember if it was Meltzer or somebody was talking about that he was commentating one of the shows and there was like some guys in there that he's kind of knocked publicly in the past, and he didn't let that come through in his commentary. So I guess he's willing to kind of, you know, he's, because I remember when he did the commentary for What Culture, you know, he was open to, you know, he commentated Joey Ryan, which, like, you know, made him want to vomit, but, you know, he did it. So right. I think he's open to doing it. I think Cornette's a good guy to have around. So
I think it's funny that he would do that. But if you recall when he was working for WWF, and then we had the ECW invasion in 1997. You know, they had a little bit of help there to promote the first pay per view, uh-huh. And Cornette, because of the animosity between Cornette and Paul Heyman, Cornette had great difficulty turning it off when it came to ECW. So he was there knocking ECW on the air. So that always amused me at the time. He could turn it off with certain people, but he couldn't tone it down when it came to Paul Heyman.
Well, many felt that way in the 90s. So I also want to ask you, before we talk about Raw and SmackDown, just very quickly to give the updated G1 Supercard card for Madison Square Garden. And just tell me what you think of the card so far. So we've got 5 announced matches. There's an Honor Rumble, which is going to be a Rumble Rules Battle Royal. The ROH World title is going to be Jay Lethal defending against Marty Scurll. Got a 3-way match for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title with Ishimori defending against Dragon Lee and Bandido. A winner takes all match for the IWGP tag titles and the ROH tag titles with Guerrillas of Destiny, which is Tonga and Loa, against the Briscoe brothers from ROH. And the main event is going to be Jay White against the New Japan Cup winner, which I guess we all assume is going to be Okada. So what do you make of that card? Is that a Madison Square Garden WrestleMania weekend level card for you?
Well, I mean, ever since they lost the Elite, it's all felt a bit watered down, hasn't it? I mean, I was looking at the Ring of Honor. It's the 17th anniversary event coming up, and I looked at the lineup, and it's not strong. But that's where Ring of Honor is right now after losing the Elite. I mean, it's pretty much gutted them in terms of star power. I don't know whether it's really MSG worthy, but it doesn't really matter what I think, Kenny, because I'm not going to be going to the show.
Also, it's sold out, so they've already sold the show out, so, you know.
That's right, yeah, they sold it out before they announced the single match, as we all know. And obviously, they never announced that the Elite would be there, but I would say if you were to poll 100 people who had bought tickets to that event, I would say at least half of them would have expected Cody and the Bucks and Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, to be on that show. I think that's a fair.
I think that's you being nice about it. I think three quarters would have thought so. You know, and even the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson, have been quite vocal on Twitter saying, you know, just in for full clarity, we are not going to even be in New York that weekend. Which I actually think could be a smart move for them. Because they're not, if they were to go to WrestleMania weekend, and you know they might still do it and do something, but like, there's so much going on that like, how do you stand out from the crowd in this big weekend and stuff? Whereas they're almost saying, you know, WrestleMania weekend is not the be all and end all. We have our weekend in May 25th or whatever.
Yeah.
So you know, we're gonna create our own weekend. And I think that's quite a smart, risky, but ballsy move to have.
Well, you're right. I mean, what were they gonna do in the New York area that was going to compete with what's already scheduled? I mean, nothing really, unless AEW were going to try and do some sort of rally or something like that, or press event. But I mean, it would have been overshadowed by the things that are already occurring. So what would the purpose of that have been? So yeah, absolutely in full agreement there, Kenny. They've got their own thing going on in May, and the eyes of the wrestling world will be on that when that takes place, which is the way it should be.
Yeah, exactly. I should also point out that the August 31st New Japan show in London at the Cooper Box Arena apparently sold 4,500 tickets in the pre-sale. Osprey and Ibushi have been announced, and it's supposed to be, you know, the major stars are going to be there. Okada and Jay White and Tanahashi. So
I'm sure they will be. Yeah, absolutely.
So I mean,
they've been promoting this heavily. This has been pushed much harder than any previous shows they've done over here or any other shows they've done in conjunction with another promotion. So I mean, this is obviously a huge deal to them. And yeah, great that they've sold all these tickets. It's going to be big, and it really enhances their position on the world stage that they're going to be running a show in front of at least that many people.
PW Insider had reported that Gallows and Anderson, whose contracts are up later on this year in WWE, they have turned down multi-million-dollar deals to renew. And I mean, look, we're not going to sit here and be like, why would they want to leave? But what do you make of their run in WWE? Did you expect them to do better or worse than they have? And do you think that them leaving and sort of going to pastures new, which I guess we would assume is AEW, is the right move for them at this stage of the game?
I would say it's absolutely the right move for them. I mean, let's say multi-million-dollar deals, that'll be a three-year deal. So maybe it's hard for me to believe that they would be offered $600,000 or $700,000 per year each. I mean, I know WWE's got a lot of money right now and they don't want people leaving, but it's hard for me to believe that they would pay them that much to prevent them from leaving an act that they don't even use. I mean, when was the last time that Gallows and Anderson were relevant in WWE? I can't remember when it was. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, no, I think they had the tag titles in 2017 and then they lost them in that ladder match at WrestleMania that year where the Hardys came back.
Yeah.
And I don't think they've really done anything since. I mean, no, they did have that thing. Remember very briefly they were paired with Balor on Raw? And then it around the whole time of the Seth Rollins, Jason Jordan thing. But it never really went anywhere. I mean, the fact that I'm saying all this to you and you're just drawing a blank, Finn, tells us exactly what we need to know.
Yeah, I mean, they've just been bit players. I mean, they've just been there making up the numbers and just filling out the ranks. And it's just like you go back and look at what they did in New Japan earlier in the decade. They had some really good matches. I mean, they were a menacing team. They really, you know, to me, emitted a sense of threat, which heels are supposed to do. And in WWE, they were just never really given anything to work with. I don't know whether I really thought that they were going to do that much better. I mean, when that story came out that Vince didn't realise that Luke Gallows had previously been Festus, I knew they were in trouble at that moment, because Vince would be like, right, yeah, this guy used to be Festus. Can we really push him as a top guy? No. I think it was pretty much all over for him at that point. I mean, it's such a shame. I mean, two guys that really tried hard to better themselves did terrific in New Japan. They thought that they'd reached the end of their end of the line there, you know, that the end of their run had come, and it was time for them to explore an alternative option in pro wrestling. I understand why people do that, because you have to try these things, and there's no way you can know whether or not you're going to succeed in WWE unless you give it a shot. So, you know, I don't blame them for trying. They've been in New Japan for a fair few years. I can't remember exactly how long they've been there, but it had been quite a number of years. Certainly Carl Anderson, he'd been there a long, long time. So it seemed to be worth the risk. It just proves that there is more to wrestling for some performers than the money. It's like, okay, you might be getting paid all this money, but are you feeling creatively fulfilled? And if you can make decent money elsewhere and be creatively fulfilled, then why not seek that path? So good for them, you know, for deciding to do something that's going to make them feel good about themselves as performers, rather than just hanging around and taking the money. Yeah, good for them.
Couple other quick notes. EC3 is someone who we've not seen on the main roster. I think he's been in a couple of backstage things, but he's not really been doing anything. But you alerted me to the fact that he apparently lost by pinfall to who on main event?
Tyler Breeze on main event this week. And 2 weeks ago, he had lost to Apollo Crews on main event. It's not looking good for EC3.
No, I mean, like, because I was talking with Sandra on Yellow Ropes Forever last year about I thought that he in NXT never really had a good match, apart from that six-man ladder match that he was in.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that would have been at the TakeOver the night before WrestleMania, wasn't it?
Yeah, the one in New Orleans. I remember kind of saying, I was like, you know, even though I'm totally a character guy when it comes to wrestling, that characters do way more for me than an in-ring, you have to be able to perform to a certain level in-ring. And I don't know, I mean, why do you think he's not? Because he almost in some ways seems like a WWE character. You know, a lot of people thought he'd be made for the main roster because he's more of a character than a, you know, five-star wrestler guy. Why do you think he's not clicked, or they've not felt the need to push him?
I don't know. I mean, I didn't think he was going to make it. I think I said that he'd probably do about as well as Bobby Roode, and then they'll like give up on him after that. But he hasn't done anywhere near as well as Bobby Roode. You know what I mean? It's just been. I mean, he had a match with Dean Ambrose, or did he have two matches with Dean Ambrose?
He had two.
Two. I didn't think he looked very good in those matches. I thought he looked well below WWE standards. You're right. When he was in NXT, what did he really do that was that good? I felt like he was probably just a bit intimidated by the standards there. I thought he did well in Impact Wrestling. He had some good matches there. He had some really good feuds. But that was a smaller promotion in which the standards weren't quite as high. So I think when he returned to NXT, I just felt like he knew that he perhaps wasn't good enough to compete with the elite, as in the elite players in NXT, not Kenny Omega and friends. I don't think he really felt like he was as good as the people who were the best performers in that company or on that brand. And that was, you know, it's a very work rate, or at least it was when, you know, this time last year and in late 2017. I think the standards were really high then of the in-ring competition. But he was a guy that really needed to depend more on his character and his vocal work. And really, it was his body as well that sort of got him the gig in the first place. You can be sure that they look, wow, look at this guy's physique. He looks amazing. This guy's a star. This guy could be huge in WWE, you know, because, you know, the way you look is still very important to WWE. Absolutely it is. Don't let anyone tell you any different. But I mean, it's like, it's obviously not the be-all and end-all because they've already given up on him. So I'm surprised, really, that they didn't give him more of a chance. And did they allow him to say anything on Raw, Kenny? Did he get to say anything?
Not on a microphone. Oh, no. He had the... I think he got to say something in the moment of bliss that set up the Ambrose match.
Okay.
But then I can't remember what it is, so...
I mean, it was so... Whatever he said, it was... I mean, this guy can really tear it up on the mic. I mean, he's pretty damn good on the mic. So if they were really capitalising on that strength more than his in-ring, I think he would have had more of a chance than he's had. And I'm not sure why they haven't really given him a chance to speak. Maybe they don't rate him as a speaker, as a rater. I don't know. I find it bizarre. I didn't think he was ever going to be like, you know, main event, but I thought he might have had a decent mid-card run, and he hasn't even had that. He did beat Apollo Crews on main event last week, but, I mean, that's like two losses in the space of three episodes. Hey, maybe he'll get his win back against Tyler Breeze next week with that 50-50 booking, which gets no one anywhere.
And never has.
And never has.
Last thing before we move on to Raw and SmackDown, JR has announced that he is... When his contract runs out with WWE at the beginning of April, he is done. He's moving on. I guess my question to you is, what do you think would his... You know, there's rumours that he's going to do a podcast with Conrad Thompson that's based more on his past, which I think is a great idea because he has a ton of stories that he never really gets to tell, you know, and I think that's a much more engaging format for him to do. But, I mean, AEW is the natural rumour. What do you think is next for Jim Ross?
I believe he's also filed for a trademark to bill himself as the voice of wrestling. Have you heard that as well, Kenny?
I haven't. I mean, David J. McCutcheon will be going mad because that's he tried to get that moniker for himself. trademarked.
That could be a vicious rumour, but I did read that somewhere earlier today. It's always been weird, hasn't it, with Jim Ross and WWE? And, you know, when I did that interview with him last year... And he was saying, well, things are really good between me and WWE. They allow me to do this thing with, what was the channel? Was it Access, the channel that he was doing commentary for?
Yeah, him and Josh Barnett.
That's right, for New Japan. So it's like, oh, we've got this really good relationship. And then they kind of put the kibosh on that. And now apparently he's leaving. To me, Jim Ross is a guy that wants to do stuff. He wants to be a doer. He wants to be involved. I mean, I think if he had his way, he would like to be commentating each week for WWE, if he's still under contract to the company, which obviously is until the end of this month. So, I mean, if there's something out there for him, which is going to enable him to do, you know, commentary for a major promotion, I think he's going to seek that path. He's going to seek that route. The word is that WWE really only re-signed him to get him away from World of Sport. And I think he was doing stuff for What Culture as well, wasn't he, at one point?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was like, you know, that's the way WWE is right now, is that, you know, they want it all. They want things their way. And maybe, you know, Jim's just thought, well, it's not working out with WWE. I mean, do we know if this is Ross's choice or WWE has refused to extend his deal? Has that information come out?
That information has not come out, but I think JR saw, you know, saw that he's not done anything in a year. You know, probably saw that it's more of a, they want him under contract rather than actually doing anything with him. I think he's almost, I could be wrong here, but I always think he thinks that he has a point to prove. He thinks that he has a point to prove that, you know, he still feels he's able to contribute as a commentator and WWE do not feel that way. You know, he did the stuff with New Japan, and there's a kind of weird thing where, like, older wrestling fans really like hearing him do that stuff, and then a lot of newer wrestling fans don't seem to enjoy his commentary on those matches so much, because, you know, he's got to deal with the names that he's got to kind of remember. It's very fast-paced, there's a lot of people. I almost think he feels like he needs to have that one last run to kind of, for himself to be happy. So,
I think so as well. I think he's somebody that wants to be involved. He doesn't want to sit at home and take a paycheck. You know, not that anyone gets paid by check anymore.
No, at all. So I guess we should move on to the fallout from Fastlane on Raw and SmackDown. Let's start with Raw. What did you make of Raw? What are the highlights, and how are they doing in terms of getting us on the road to WrestleMania? We had title changes. We had Batista showing up and being a tremendous aesthetic presence on the show. With his glittery
jacket. What about that jacket? Oh. I mean, what about that jacket? Kenny, you need to get yourself one of those for the next tour.
I need to get one of those for WrestleMania. I need to get down to Burton's or Next in the High Street and see, have you got a Batista jacket?
That's it. Yeah, I'm sure Burton stocked that exact jacket.
I'm sure. But what did you... And then obviously they did a pretty big angle with Drew McIntyre to kind of get him ready to be Roman Reigns' WrestleMania opponent. How did they do on Raw for you in terms of... giving us some fallout and setting us up on WrestleMania?
Yeah, I felt like it felt like a big show to me. It felt like a lot happened, and it felt like a different program as well. I mean, there's been many times over really last couple of years where Raw's felt very formulaic, you know, where you can kind of predict what's going to happen before it happens. And this week's Raw, I just thought there was a lot of different stuff on there, which I didn't see coming. I mean, some of it was good, some of it was not so good. I mean, it amused me when the Shield opened the program for their farewell address and they were all wearing new T-shirts. I mean, you know, this is just high comedy. You know, you just couldn't make stuff like this up, Kenny.
Well, you did make that. You were the one that spotted it. You said you now know Dean Ambrose is leaving because he's the only one that didn't get his own T-shirt.
That's it. They came out with it, you know, Hounds of Justice T-shirts on. And then later in the program, Reigns was pictured with his individual shirt and Seth Rollins was pictured wearing his individual T-shirt design as well. But Ambrose was there still wearing the Shield one. He must have been miffed. But I it just amused me that that's it. The Shield's all over and they're wearing a brand new T-shirt design. So, I mean, the opening segment with Seth Rollins, left standing after Reigns and Ambrose departed, and then Paul Heyman came out. Would have been nice to have seen an appearance from Brock Lesnar here, but obviously Brock couldn't be asked. And it's like Heyman was...
Oh God, for, yeah.
You know, so,
couldn't be asked.
Then Heyman said to Rollins, "You run your mouth like you know Brock Lesnar, like you've been introduced to Brock Lesnar." And then we got this video of Brock Lesnar, which, you know, because Brock... I mean, I don't know. Maybe he was like reading up. Maybe the latest issue of New Frontiersman had just come out. You know, he didn't have time to fit it into his busy schedule. So instead of Brock turning up, we had a highlights video of him destroying people. It's like, hold on a minute. Seth Rollins has faced Brock Lesnar before. So I didn't really like the presentation of that, where Heyman was sent out to say, "You don't really know who he is," when Rollins faced him back in 2015 several times. So I thought that was a bit ridiculous. And then Shelton Benjamin came out and attacked Seth Rollins. Is there a... I mean, Shelton Benjamin, like the Steve Blackman of the modern era. I mean, it was like... I mean, this was like serenaded by the sounds of pins dropping, wasn't it? Serenaded by the sounds of pins dropping. Shelton Benjamin just could not have been less over. It would be impossible to find anyone less over than Shelton Benjamin was on Raw this week. And then, of course, Shelton lost to Seth. Of course he did. So I think Heyman actually said that he had paid Shelton Benjamin to run in and tack Seth Rollins. I think that's right. I'm not making that up, am I, Kenny?
Yeah, there was a segment they did on .com that wasn't on Raw, but it was kind of in between that set all that up, yeah.
So, Lesnar's going to show up next week and they're going to do something that's going to be interesting. No, I can't say I'm really that interested in the Rollins versus Lesnar match. I'm hoping that they're going to change my mind next week and make me more interested in that match than I am currently. What did you think to the opening segment?
Yeah, I mean, I take what you're saying. I liked Heyman's kind of... I liked the idea of Seth saying, you know, all these smaller guys recently have taken Brock Lesnar to his limit. You know, I like that. And then I like the idea of Heyman kind of saying, well... let's get it straight. You know, every time that's happened, Brock has had an opponent that he has been scheduled for and it's been changed on him, you know, very, very soon before. I like that. I thought that was a good kind of sports-like argument. And if you don't think too far back, like the 2015 matches, then, you know, you can kind of have that. You can make it work. Yeah, you're right, though. The Seth Brock match is not that exciting. A lot of other stuff. I mean, if you had told me that in the year of 2019, I would probably be slightly more interested in AJ Styles versus Randy Orton, I would have called you crazy, but here we are.
Here we are, after that segment on SmackDown, which we'll get to shortly. So, yeah, I mean, Heyman's always really good on the mic, and he's just following instructions. I get that. So this is not really a knock on him. He's been told what he's got to say, and that's the way it is. So, I'm hoping something happens when Lesnar finally turns up that's going to get me invested in this match, because I'm really not at the moment.
Yeah, so Lesnar's scheduled next week for Chicago, so we'll see what happens. So let's fire through the rest, because a lot happened on Raw. We saw Bobby Lashley defeat Finn Balor with help from Leo Rush to regain the Intercontinental Championship. What did you make of this finish? I will note here that WrestleVotes on Twitter, which is a kind of website, a Twitter account that tends to report stuff that does happen, they had tweeted out shortly after Raw, chatting with a source this morning. One notable quote was, "I'm figuring they took the IC title off Finn for a reason. I think they have something for him at Mania." So I guess two questions: what do you make of the belt going back on Bobby Lashley, and what do you think they could have for Finn at Mania?
I felt that Finn Balor lost too easily to Lashley. It was obviously Leo Rush came out. He did not come out with Lashley when Lashley made his entrance. Leo Rush was still injured from the Braun Strowman beatdown the previous week. So he came out, rang the bell, distracted Balor, and then Lashley scored the pin. Just felt like Lashley defeated Balor, not effortlessly, but with more ease than I would have imagined for someone of Balor's stature. So, I mean, I don't have any objection to Lashley regaining the belt, but I did not really, I cannot really support the way that it went down. I felt that Balor should have had more offense and should have kicked out of a lot more near falls than he did do. So, yeah, I felt that this was felt like Balor was being downgraded here. That's my take on it. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, it was pretty underwhelming. It was pretty underwhelming to watch. I get what they were going for, but I just don't think you should book every babyface like the underdog all the time. I think sometimes they have to get the win, you know.
Absolutely, and especially after. I mean, I'm not going to drone on about it. I have done previously with Balor losing to Lesnar in the way he did at Royal Rumble. I mean, Balor should have really.
Yeah, I'm with you. The Lesnar thing.
Yeah, I'm not going to drone on about the Brock Lesnar match because I've already talked about that. But after the way in which Balor lost to Lesnar at Royal Rumble, I felt like he should have been presented more strongly, should have been presented as more of a force than he has been. And this Lashley match, it just felt like a setback to me for Finn Balor.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking for a couple of weeks now about how he had to get the big win over Lashley. He's not been able to do that. So I'm curious about what they do with him, because he can't beat Lesnar, he can't beat Lashley. Like, what is the plan for him, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
And especially, you know, going forward in the next couple of years, if we're going to have guys like Ricochet and Finn Balor, who are smaller guys, they need to be getting wins over, you know, bigger guys. And I feel like, sadly, there's somebody who, we hear too many stories that he doesn't believe that smaller guys can beat bigger guys cleanly. And I think that needs to change for some of these stars to feel like big players rather than just feeling like second rate.
Exactly. I mean, it's 5 years now since the Daniel Bryan push. I mean, and he beat some big guys to become champion. So, you know, why can't Finn Balor 5 years later?
Exactly. Up next, I want to look. I find this one quite difficult to talk about because I don't really know how to come at it. So Ronda Rousey comes out and she does a heel promo, and it brings out Dana Brooke, right? And Dana Brooke comes out and does what I think was some of the worst verbiage I've ever seen in my life. The delivery was horrendous. She was going, enough, Rhonda. I think we've heard enough of your venom tonight. Like, she couldn't put words together. She could not do it. Now, I was kind of having a laugh at it. Because, you know, when somebody does a bad performance, when you're covered in wrestling, you can kind of laugh at a bad performance. Because, you know, these are performers that are paid quite a lot of money. They should have a thick enough skin to take it, right?
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yes.
So, the next day, Dana Brooke put this thing up on Instagram. A very long post about how, you know, she's been through so much. And, you know, because famously her boyfriend, who's a bodybuilder, died very young. And she's had that to go through. And, you know, she's gone through a lot of stuff in her own life. And she had said in the post about, you know, I put my heart and soul into it and da-da-da. And in my head I was going, sadly, and I say this with absolute sincerity, I completely understand and support that she's gone through a lot and I hope that she's okay. But you can't use that stuff as an excuse for being terrible. Because she was terrible on the mic. She was absolutely atrocious. And to me, you just can't defend it. You can't defend that performance. And then to say that was her giving her best. I mean, I'd rather she'd said, oh, I had an off night, because if that's your best, you know, you shouldn't even be on television. I mean, what did you think when Dana Brooke came out? Is it as bad as I saw it to be, or am I being too harsh on it, Finn?
Well, I mean, no, I don't think you are. I mean, Rousey had she did really well on the mic here. I mean, she slowed it down just a little bit and really just trashed Becky, trashed Charlotte. Crucially, she trashed WWE in this whole charade. Anyone who believes in this whole charade is a joke. So that was a forceful promo. She came at it hard. And when Ronda delivers something that she believes in, or she convinces herself that she's, you know, using that almost that sort of method type stuff, you can see that she's using a lot of, there's a lot of reality in everything that she says, and she convinces herself that it's true. And that's why she makes it come across as so believable and meaningful. And then the person that WWE sent out to defend WWE's honor was Dana Brooke. And it's just like, hold on a minute, why have they sent her out? And the delivery was poor. It was poor. And she was saying, I'm not a household name and I've tried really hard and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, I'm sorry, but your delivery is bad. You know, people say, oh, there was a lot of passion in her voice. And I'm sure there was, but it wasn't something that, you know, I'm sure she felt that she was attacking it with passion, but it didn't convince me. And she was coming from it also with the background of being somebody that's never really achieved anything in WWE. So why was she put in this position to defend WWE? I understand they couldn't send Becky or Charlotte out there. I do get that. But why not send Ember Moon out, or even Nikki Cross, or somebody who can deliver a promo? You know, somebody who can go out there and people can believe in. I just don't think people can believe in Dana Brooke. I can't anyway. I'm sure maybe some people can, but I certainly can't. And this verbal performance here did nothing to change my opinion of her. And then after that, she got in the ring and Rousey absolutely smashed her. I mean, Dana could have at least had a little bit of a comeback. She could have at least had a little bit of offense. So basically, Rousey just proved that she was nowhere near good enough to step in the ring with her. And I just don't get it. The whole presentation of it was bad. The choice of Dana was bad. Obviously, her mic work was dreadful as well. But she was put in a very difficult position. How are people really going to put their faith in her when she hasn't really done anything in WWE in all the time she's been there, apart from being, you know, obviously she's done more than being Titus Worldwide statistician. I get that. But she hasn't really done a whole lot in this company that you can really point to and say, wow, what a performance that was. And then Rousey just blasted her. So I just found the whole segment after Rousey had stopped speaking to be just perplexing on so many levels.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Obviously, you know, Ember Moon's injured, so she couldn't come out. But Nikki Cross is a great suggestion. You know, you've also got somebody like Mickie James who's there, who she's not really doing anything right now.
She could have done it. I mean, she's there. People would have believed in her because she's a veteran. And I don't think Mickie James is really that amazing as a female wrestler, but or any type of wrestler, in fact. But she's somebody that's been around the business for, what is it? It's got to be best part of two decades. And it's like she could come out there and people would believe in her because she's got the pedigree, whereas Dana hasn't. So yeah, she was put in a bad spot, really bad spot.
And I think, you know, there's people like Dana, who was the statistician, and Lana, who obviously before was the valet for Rusev. And I don't mean this in a bad way, but they are not good enough to be in the ring with the likes of Asuka and Becky and Charlotte and these women who can do 20-minute matches and make them exciting and whatever. And I think sometimes that there's this thing where, like, you know, like, so for me, right, my strength, I guess, is I can talk about wrestling, or I can interview wrestlers. I know that's what I'm quite good at. That's what I do. I have no rhythm or coordination. I can't ride a bicycle. So I'm not going to be in sports. I'm not going to try because there's no point. I'm that's just not my strength. And I think sometimes having like Lana or Dana Brooke, I mean, Dana Brooke is better than Lana, I'll give her that. But like, I just feel like it's not doing anything. It's not progressing anything. And the world doesn't need more basic wrestlers in it. You know, we need more performers who are going to stand out. And I just don't think that Dana is that performer. And as much as I feel bad for her personally, I just think, you know, when you talk about wrestling, you have to cover it as you see it. And I thought she was bad. So, up next.
She was. Yeah, I mean, I thought also then the referees came out and Ronda gave one of those referees such a slap, didn't she?
Yeah, Ronda was great here. Ronda is like a money main event player. I'm loving what she's doing right now.
Yeah, she had a really good week. She absolutely had a great week. And this would have been even better if it had been Mickie James or Nikki Cross coming out, because people would have believed in them as somebody who was defending pro wrestling's honor. And hopefully then maybe they would have had like a brawl for like 90 seconds or 2 minutes in which they'd actually got a bit of offense in. And that actually could have then set up a match next week, which Ronda would have cost. She would have then won that match, but it would have given her something to do next week on Raw that wouldn't have burned out the whole Becky, Charlotte, Ronda thing. They could have come out and observed it, but then, you know, because they've obviously got to come up with something for Ronda to do next week. But had she had like a spirited brawl with Mickie James or Nikki Cross on Raw this week, she could have then had the match next week and then done something with maybe Becky and Charlotte afterwards. I do not know why they didn't do something like that. I mean, this was just the choice of Dana Brooke was just all wrong. Don't get it at all.
So, I mean, I guess the testament to how noteworthy this episode of Raw was is there's not really much for us to skip, so we've got a lot to talk about. We've got Ricochet and Aleister Black defeating Bobby Roode and Chad Gable, and then post-match, they got attacked by The Revival and left them laying. So I guess maybe we're going towards a sort of tag title match at WrestleMania with these teams. I think the matches are pretty good and are only going to keep getting better, so I'm actually okay with this programme. How do you feel about it?
I just would like them all to have some mic time, maybe to do some angles backstage. I mean, we still don't really know who Aleister Black is. I mean, we've got a clue who he is. Why is he pals with Ricochet? I mean, well, we know why, because to give him something to do. We've talked previously about The Revival getting no mic time and just not being able to get themselves over as characters. So it just feels to me like it could be a lot better than it is. But I mean, the in-ring aspect is good enough to make it interesting. You know, the tragedy is that it could be so much better.
You know, I mean, as Stephanie McMahon said a couple of weeks ago, it's just, you know, that's part of the complex world that is WWE, Finn.
Kenny, have a think. Well, exactly. Well, thank you, Stephanie, for putting me straight. You know, if Dana Brooke can be given some mic time, why can't The Revival? Why can't Ricochet, why can't Aleister Black, or at least be given more mic time, why can't Bobby Roode and Chad Gable? You know,
when you... Very valid concerns when you get that amount of time, when you've got that amount of television.
Yeah, when you put it in those terms, it's even crazier.
We did find out Alexa Bliss is going to be the host of WrestleMania. Good gig for her. I think she's going to, you know, that will suit her. So, you know, nice to see she's going to get something on the show, even if it's not wrestling. So, good for her.
Yeah, I still think that Alexa and Nia Jax should be the team. I think those two as a tag team, that's a money team. You know, I'm sorry, Tamina Snuka, but you've outlived your usefulness.
I will not hear any disparaging comments about Tamina Snuka. This is really bad. So Lillian Garcia has a podcast called Chasing the Glory, or something with Glory, right? And she had Tamina on as a guest. And she put this like title for her, and I just cackled. I couldn't quite believe that this is what Do you know what the nickname is now for Tamina Snuka?
No.
The Sultress of Savagery. I mean, what? The Sultress of Savagery. My God.
Tamina Snuka, you know, she's a human being. She's a wrestler. She's got a right to live a life filled with contentment and joy. But
you can't even find a compliment in here, can you? She's a human. She's a wrestler.
Yeah, but you know what a waste of space, Kenny.
What a waste of space. I actually, you know, because Tamina is quite bad, I actually quite like her in the bodyguard role where she's not wrestling. I've always quite liked her in that role. So, you know, if she can do that, I'm more than happy to just see her on the outside looking menacing and sort of being the heavy for somebody. So
exactly, for Nia and Alexa Bliss.
There you go, get it changed. Braun Strowman was interviewed by Charlie Caruso over the thing with the Saturday Night Live guys from last week. Strowman said they better stay away. It ends up that they've given him a car. He ends up tearing it apart. So for the third year in a row, it looks like Braun Strowman is going to be handed nothing good to do at WrestleMania. Now, I try to be a positive kind of... I try to be positive about wrestling. I think there's a lot to be positive about in WWE and not. But this is absolute bollocks.
Yeah, it is. But what can I say, Kenny? I mean, they sent him this car. I mean, it must have cost a lot of money. It was a nice thing to do. And he destroyed the car. All I can say is, what an ingrate. I mean, he deserves it for being ungrateful. I've got no sympathy for him.
There you go. There you go, that's that. So then we got we got some more stuff with Natalya and Nia Jax building up that kind of Beth Phoenix and Natalya tag team. But of course, the SUVs arrived. Batista came out of the second SUV. He's got, you know, security with him. Triple H comes out. He wants Batista to come out. Batista comes out and basically they go back and forth. And Batista's like, "Give me what I want." Now, have you seen the remix that somebody has put on Facebook? Have you seen this?
Is this the one with the Spice Girls song "Wannabe"?
Yes.
Yes, I have.
I mean, the internet. I'm so glad it exists for that. I'll play it to close us out this week, ladies and gentlemen. Instead of the Power Slam song, I will play the 45-second clip of that. It is absolutely insanely good. But anyway, the gist of it is they're going back and forth, and Batista's saying, "Give me what I want," and Hunter's saying, you know, anyway, I'm just going to start singing the song if I keep doing that. But anyway, the gist of it is that Triple H, says, you know, "If you won't come down here and fight me, I'll come up there and I'll tear through the Guardians of the Independent scene," or whatever they are. And Batista finally gets his wish. Triple H agrees to face him at WrestleMania. And Batista very calmly says, "Thank you. That's all I've ever wanted. One last match to end my career on my terms. And that one last match to end your career on my terms. I'll see you at Mania." And he leaves. And Triple H makes it no holds barred. I thought this was a pretty exciting segment. And I'm hoping that we get a lot of bells and whistles with it.
Yeah, I mean, it was really good to see Batista. He turned up in a presidential-style motorcade wearing that jacket. I mean, the jacket made the segment. If they'd just gone out there and said nothing, in that jacket, it would have been a hit. So, I mean, Batista was a little bit rough on the mic, but this is the first time he's done a promo in front of a live crowd in, I don't know, a very long time. Many years, 5 years nearly. So, I mean, that was forgivable. I thought they did really well setting it up. I'm pleased that they're going with the no holds barred gimmick stipulation for this match, because, as I said on previous podcasts, I was deeply concerned about these two just having a straight match that might drag on and on. With the no holds barred relaxed rules, it gives them scope to do so much more. And I'm, you know, now more confident than I was a week ago that the match can be a success. So yeah, I enjoyed it. And I thought it was well done as well. The final line from Batista was really good about him wanting to end his own career on his terms and Triple H's career on his terms. So I thought that was a nice little touch at the end there. And hopefully they will take that further on next week's Raw, when Triple H is no doubt asked about the match, a promo about the match, or whatever they do next week.
So then we got Kurt Angle coming out. He had something to say about his future. He has a t-shirt over his wrestling gear. talked about he's going to have his farewell match at WrestleMania. He wanted to thank wrestlers, choked up a little bit, but thanking the fans, big thank you, Kurt chant. He wanted to have one more match in Pittsburgh, so he faced and defeated Apollo Crews. What do you make of his decision? And I do want to just throw to one of our questions that we did have for the overrun, but it feels like we should just ask it here. And it's from Adam James, who wants to know, who do you feel is the best choice to retire Kurt Angle, either in or out of kayfabe? Who should be the person he faces at WrestleMania?
I mean, some people are saying it's going to be John Cena. That's a particularly good choice, but at least it's a big match for Cena to be in if he's going to participate in WrestleMania. And it'll be an even match. These two will, you know, Angle will have a lot of offense, and I have no idea how good the match would be, but it probably would get a good response. And if it's got a big atmosphere, then that's going to make it more memorable. And if people aren't really that into it, so I mean, I think it's the right move for Kurt Angle to retire at WrestleMania. I mean, he hasn't done that much in the ring. Over the last year, I thought when he was doing the stuff at the end of 2000 and was it the stuff at Survivor Series, not last year, the year before,
Survivor Series 2017,
and that he would look like he was really struggling there. When he was the Raw general manager, there were times when he was just standing in the ring and he looked like he was in agony just standing there. It didn't look like he could stand up straight because his knees were so far gone. He has looked better in recent times. I think his professional pride and his will to go out on a high will ensure that his final match is pretty good and that he really, really will enter a strong performance in it. I'm not really sure who he should be in there with. Obviously, Jason Jordan would be the person that we would all, I think most of us would choose. But here we are. I think we're about 13 months on now from Jason Jordan's last match. It's got to be about a year, hasn't it?
Yeah, and he's actually working backstage as a producer right now.
Okay. I mean, it's not looking good for him ever making a comeback. I don't know whether he will. I don't know. Has an official decision been made yet?
No, but like you said, I don't think it's looking good.
It's not looking good. I mean, Jason Jordan would be, I think, most people's first pick for Kurt Angle's final opponent. It would be nice to see him lose to a young up-and-comer. I mean, maybe Finn Balor. Could it be Finn Balor? I don't know. I mean, Finn Balor's, I know, not that young, but he still feels like he's got a lot more growth he could achieve in WWE. It would be nice to see him in there, I think, with somebody younger who I think would benefit from this more than just bringing Cena back and them having the match, even though that would also be memorable. Cena's obviously not going to get anything out of a win or a loss to... he's not going to get anything out of a win out of Kurt Angle in Angle's last match. And if he loses to Kurt Angle in Angle's last match, that's not really going to make any difference to Cena either. So I don't really have an answer to that question. I'd have to think about it. Maybe I should have a think about it and come up with something on the overrun. It'll give me time to think of an opponent that I would like to see him in there with.
There you go.
Is there anyone you could name off the top of your head, Kenny, that you would like to see as Angle's opponent in his retirement match?
I think Balor's a good choice. I think I could see them taking the US title, the IC title off him to give him that match. The Cena one is... Because there was kind of a tease of Samoa Joe and John Cena last week.
Yeah.
Which they didn't really progress this week, so I guess they're still deciding. I think Joe and Cena is a better match than Cena and Angle.
I think so as well, yeah, because Joe's playing the heel and the villain, and that's a better dynamic, I think.
Also, if you do Balor and Angle, Balor can do a lot of the work around Kurt.
Yeah.
Whereas Cena, like, you know, all joking aside, and there are jokes to be made... the Cena is someone who, when was the last time he wrestled? He had that match. Was it Crown Jewel?
Hasn't he done some stuff this year? He did a few matches, didn't he?
He did a thing with Becky Lynch, team on that. But, you know, the idea of John Cena, who doesn't wrestle that often, against Kurt Angle, who's kind of on his last hurrah, I just don't know if that would be the best one. But you are right, that would have a big match atmosphere, so maybe that's the way to go. I think it's between Cena and Balor.
Yeah, and also Cena would be booed. So Angle would be cheered, so you would get that response as well. So, I mean, that would probably make it work. And Cena, he knows how to play off that, and he knows how to make that work. He knows how to milk it. So I mean, it would work from that standpoint in terms of reactions, but it doesn't really do anything for anyone. Whereas if it's Finn Balor, I think it could be something that would be good for his career in the long run.
And my third sort of like long shot pick would be The Undertaker, because I feel they're going to do something with him. I don't know if many people noticed that on Raw this week, they had a brief image of him in the WrestleMania ad, which he hasn't been in before. So I think he's a long shot. I don't know what he'd be able to do now with Kurt Angle in-ring-wise, but I think that could be a long shot I could see them doing to play off that, you know, the great match they had at No Way Out 2006. Because they were originally supposed to... They wanted to have the match at WrestleMania 22.
Yes.
And it ended up being Undertaker and Mark Henry. So there you go. That's my other long shot, though.
I mean, Angle has always said that's one of his favourite ever matches, the one with The Undertaker at that No Way Out event. So, I mean, I think he would like to wrestle The Undertaker as well. But what is The Undertaker capable of in the ring in 2019? And if the match is a big disappointment, that would be a real shame for Kurt Angle.
Yeah, for sure. Last thing on Raw, we had Roman Reigns coming out for a match with Baron Corbin, but Drew McIntyre blindsides him. He gives him these brutal kicks and shoves him into the ring post. Roman's helped away by Seth, doing the kind of injury angle. This leads to Dean wanting a match with Drew. So we have this Falls Count Anywhere match with Drew and Dean that ends with Drew kind of decisively taking out Dean Ambrose and standing tall to end the show. What did you make of this, you know, this kind of 25 minutes, which was designed to get Drew over to, I guess, to be Roman's opponent at WrestleMania? What did you make of it, and how successful were they?
Well, when Drew used a pencil on Dean Ambrose's head and there was no blood, at that moment, the Sheik rolled over in his grave. So I thought it was very well presented. As you said, Reigns was destroyed by Drew. There was like the big claymore kick, wasn't it? And Reigns' head supposedly struck the ring post and he was all woozy. They sent the doctor out, refused to allow him to wrestle. He had to go backstage into the trainer's room and Seth Rollins went in with him. Then Ambrose asked Triple H for a like false count anywhere match with McIntyre, and Triple H complied with his request and it happened. I thought it was Ambrose's best singles match in a long time, which isn't really saying a whole lot, I know, but it was, he seemed really energized by the spot in the main event and by the whole circumstances of the angle, and he was out there fighting for his friend and his teammate and his brother, and Drew McIntyre looked really strong. He was really good as the opposition there, as the villain. They fought up the steps, through the crowd. Fans weren't really that into it. That was quite noticeable to me. And Drew McIntyre is a guy that I don't know whether he's really got over at that true main event heel level. He's not far off, but he's just not quite there yet. And even though they were having a really strong match, you know, the huge brawl, and it's very different to what we normally get on Raw. This was another match that was different to what we normally have, which I thought was what made this Raw so interesting. Didn't seem like fans were really that into it until the very end. They fought up onto the stage, went through the, you know, used the table, used all sorts of different gimmicks. I think Drew threw Ambrose headfirst into the lighting board. I think he did that twice. And Dino still kicked out, and then finally McIntyre, I think, didn't he put his, he put Ambrose's head in like a, in like some sort of, in some railing, and then he kicked the railing and then scored the 1-2-3. I think that's right, isn't it, Kenny?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, into like a handrail thing, he was in that. So I thought it was a really strong finish. And then as McIntyre's celebrating before the show ended to prove that Dean Ambrose really is the lunatic fringe, whatever that means, he got up and went at Drew, who leveled him again. So it really felt like it was, it really felt like WWE, when it does these things well, when it really tries to get someone over, it goes full pelt. And it felt like they really went for it here, because obviously Roman Reigns is a huge priority. So that means that Drew McIntyre as his opponent at WrestleMania is a huge priority as well. So it did feel to me like this was, you know, like a big moment for Drew's career, and him finally getting the, you know, the rubber stamp of approval of, yes, you are good enough to face Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. So a big night for him. I thought Ambrose, as I said, it was his best singles performance in a long time. I thought he did really well preparing Drew for this role. I'm hoping next week when Drew McIntyre appears on Raw that he gets, you know, more of a heel reaction than he usually does, and that he'll be really over as a result of these massive beatdowns. I mean, this is a guy that took out 2/3 of the Shield in one night single-handedly. So, I mean, this was huge for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm biased because I know Drew, but I think this is a great move. The best decision they could have made in terms of a Roman Reigns match at WrestleMania. Better than the Ambrose one, better than Corbin, obviously. Drew's a big money player, and Drew needed this. Like, Drew needed this angle and this kind of match for him to feel like a big deal again, and I'm glad they've done it. He's definitely the right choice, and I thought that he played his part to perfection. And by the end of it, I felt he was a main event player at the end of the show. So I'm hoping that in Chicago next week, they do more to kind of keep him being, you know, hammer home him being a heel. Don't have him be a likable heel that then, you know, ends up with Drew getting cheered and Roman getting booed. I'd like to see them continue kind of having Drew just be kind of dastardly.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, absolutely.
So let's run through SmackDown quickly and see what we think of that. We got a Shane McMahon promo to open the show where he talks about, you know, he's got his World Cup trophy. He's been asked why he did what he did. He's sick of it. You know, people think he's been handed things. You know, they just want things from him. They want more money, stock options. It's always about what he can do for them. And all of it stops when he beat up The Miz at Fastlane. He goes on to say that he's not the best in the world because of a trophy or the tag team titles. He's best because he was born that way. He said that after he was beating up The Miz and he saw The Miz's dad's big potato face, the last thing he saw was his eyes closing as he passed out. And he says he wants to beat The Miz up one more time at WrestleMania and it was going to feel awesome. What did you make of Shane's first heel promo?
Yeah, I thought he did really well here. I mean, it was like an old school thing where he made the ring announcer refer to him as the best in the world 3 times before Shane was happy with the ring announcer's performance. I thought the ring announcer was terrific here. Full marks for that ring announcer.
Greg Hamilton.
He really got into it, didn't he? He really, you know, he really made it seem like if he didn't do Shane's bidding, he was out of a job. So I thought the ring announcer was terrific here. Shane was saying that people were selfish and all he wanted to do was use him to get ahead and make more money. So, I mean, he was there taking it out on other people. I thought it was a really good performance. I thought he seemed very relaxed. I thought he seemed very at ease in this role. Obviously, he was a heel. He was a heel when he was in WWF back in 99, the Attitude Era, the point we're up to on Heat. He's a heel there, so he knows how to do this. He's played a heel and face many times in his career. And yeah, really good to say, you know, with the announcement they'd be facing Miz at WrestleMania. Miz wasn't there on the show, we should point that out, which again was the right decision because we should leave Miz's response until like next week or the week after because they don't want to wear this out. You know, I don't know how many confrontations there's going to be, physical confrontations there's going to be before their match. I think these two are better off probably just setting it up verbally rather than by having physical altercations. Because that kind of exposes that Shane's not really very good. But I thought this was a really good opening to the programme. His explanation is believable. Yeah, very well done.
I thought he did a pretty good performance. And the Shane Miz feud has been very compelling so far. So hopefully it continues in the lead up to WrestleMania. Yes. We got an 8-man tag. The Hardys, Ricochet and Aleister Black against The Bar, Nakamura and Rusev. Fans are pretty into the action for about 9 minutes. And in the end, all 8 of them getting a brawl. The New Day hits the ring. It's a big no contest. New Day's kind of beating up the heels, and the New Day kind of stand tall with them. The Usos are then backstage talking trash about the tag division and how they're kind of top of the division. And I guess there'll be something at WrestleMania with a few of these teams involved. And
I would think so. Yeah, I would think so.
I thought it was pretty fun.
Yeah, I thought it was well done, yeah. I thought it was very well done. Yeah, you would think that maybe all these teams will be involved. Maybe, I don't know whether they're going to do a gauntlet match because, as we know, there's a gauntlet match on next week's SmackDown. So that's a gimmick that has been used perhaps too often lately. So maybe
I assume we're going to get 2 4-ways at WrestleMania. In Raw, we'll get Gable and Roode, The Revival, and Black and Ricochet. And then for SmackDown, we get, I guess, The New Day, The Usos, The Bar, and The Hardys. So maybe we get a 3-way and a 4-way.
Yeah, I mean,
that's where we'd be going.
I mean, the question is, which one is on the kickoff?
Well, statistically, one of them is going to be. So
yes. Maybe they'll flip a coin.
Maybe they'll flip a coin. Up next, though, we had Randy Orton coming out doing a promo with AJ Styles. He says, you know, this is supposed to be the house that AJ Styles built. In 2002, when he was working high schools, I was making my debut. In 2004, when he was in bingo halls, I was becoming the youngest ever WWE champion. In 2005, when he was in Florida getting a tan with Dixie Carter, I was wrestling The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And he goes on to say, you know, he's been here all that time before AJ got there. This brings out AJ, who tells Orton that for someone that looks down in the indies, he's followed his career pretty closely. AJ's proud of where he came from. He's been told his entire career that guys like Orton were built for WWE, but that's because guys like Orton wouldn't have survived him. He mocks him, talks about the knockoff diamond cutter. Orton then says that, you know, him and his buddies were ripping people off and did the too sweet gesture. And in the end, it came to the bit where, you know, AJ's talking about, you know, evolution and legacy and rated RKO and the Wyatts. Now, Orton's always had somebody babysitting him. And it all ends when AJ basically challenges him to a match at WrestleMania, and Orton smirks and walks away, so we're going to get it. I did not think these two were going to have a compelling segment, but they proved me wrong. I thought this was really, really good fun.
I would like to second those remarks, Kenny. Yeah, I mean, what they did was, I mean, everything was delivered here with vim and vigour. What I liked, and this may seem like a strange observation, was that Orton kind of tripped over his words a little bit there. I think that was because he was getting quite wound up, and he was getting like emotionally in on this promo. And generally, he's just out there and he's just like phoning it in and can't really be bothered, and it's like all monotone. And it's just like here, it seemed like he really cared. And I was saying, this is the house that Randy Orton built, which is a fair point. I mean, something that we've talked about previously. How come this is the house that AJ Styles built when he's only been there since 2016? So I thought there were some really good lines in here with Styles saying, you know, your dad got you the job, you've been like, you know, spoon-fed your entire career, you've had everything handed to you. And Orton's saying, well, I've done this and I've done that and I've done the other. And then Styles is saying, well, you couldn't have made it on the indies. I'm proud of my background because I did all these things, you know, and I succeeded there. And eventually I made it here, but I made it here because I earned it. I made it here on merit. Nothing was handed to me. Felt to me like Styles. I mean, obviously, the reason this works so well is that basically what they were saying was pretty much the truth, wasn't it? That was why it worked so well. Everyone could relate to what each man was saying. And depending on whether you're like a diehard WWE fan who doesn't really bother with the other promotions, or you're a fan of other promotions and you watch WWE because it's the biggest, but your heart's really with the other companies because, you know, that feels more authentic, or whatever your reasons are for not being as big a WWE fan as you are a fan of other promotions, you can really, you know, you can choose your side here. You can pick your side and you can relate to it. You can believe in it, because pretty much everything that was said during this segment was accurate, was authentic. So I thought it was really well done. They both really brought it here. You could see just looking it in their eyes that they believed what they were saying, because it was true. And that really, I think, drove them to... I think that really brought out the best in both of them. I think they were both really here to make their points with as much, you know, force and vim and vigor as they could. So, yeah, first class. Really well done.
So then we had Asuka taking on Sonya Deville. Asuka gets the win with kind of another kind of Mandy distraction this time. The story here, I guess, is about Mandy and Sonya breaking up. My question is, who cares? really, who the fuck cares? Like,
hey, Kenny, more importantly, is there any word yet on Barry Manilow and his appearance at WrestleMania?
I'm working on it. I really am working. That's why we're having to speed up this breakup. Because, you know, if Mandy's not going to have that one-on-one match at WrestleMania with Sonya, then we can't get Barry Manilow to commit. Barry Manilow is not going to be in the kickoff show.
Exactly.
He's not taking time off from his Vegas stint for that.
Exactly. All the wrestlers could be on the kickoff. He can be on the main show. That's exactly the way it works in WWE.
There you go. We still have no idea who Asuka's facing at WrestleMania for the women's title, and I'm still, like, I mean, is it Lacey Evans? Is that changed? Is it not?
Yeah,
I just don't care. I just don't care. No offense. Like, I quite like Mandy and Sonya as a team. I said that at Elimination Chamber. I have no interest in their breakup story. Singles matches with them do not entice me. I don't need to see more of that. But I would.
I mean, it is truly baffling, Kenny, that Mandy and Sonya had such a great night at Elimination Chamber as a team. To me, that was their best night in this company. And here they are, apparently going to split them up. It's like, well, why not give them a chance as a team for 6 or 9 months or a year before you do the split?
Do you really think that them solo are going to be more successful in the current climate?
Well, exactly. I mean, Mandy Rose, she can do some things quite well. But to me, she's not a complete wrestler. She just isn't. And Sonya's had a charisma bypass. I'm sorry, she has. I mean, and the thing about this match here between Asuka and Sonya Deville, they absolutely got stuck in. Did you see how hard they were nailing each other? I mean, at one point, Sonya did this, like, pick up on Asuka and just dumped her. And, like, oh, God, you can tell that Asuka's tough. These two, really, you can tell they're tough. They can take it. I mean, Sonya's just got no personality. So, I mean, her with Mandy Rose makes her more interesting if she is teaming with Mandy Rose. So, I mean, these two kind of compensate for each other's weaknesses by being a team. And yet they want to split them up. I don't get it at all. And yeah, where does this leave Asuka? I have no idea.
Yeah, it's absolutely baffling. Up next, though, we had a Becky Lynch promo. She comes out, talks about feeling good to walk down the ramp on her own with her own 2 feet. Talks about getting in the WrestleMania match. She said that she got Ronda Rousey so wound up that she did her bidding for her. She said it's hard to play mind games with someone with no brain, but she did it. She said that she'd repay at WrestleMania by taking the title, ripping off her arms, didn't care who she had to beat, whether it was Ronnie or the Golden Girl. Great reference. Charlotte comes out. She talks about how she's been doing all the work. It's one thing to be hot for 6 months, but she's been hot for 4 years. Claims she was the chosen one because she carried the division for years and she would show everyone what that meant when she wins at WrestleMania. Calls herself Miss WrestleMania. Becky tells her to shut her plastic face. And she said that she's been on top for 6 months and that's why they're in the main event at WrestleMania. The division doesn't need a queen, probably never did, because what it really needed was the man, and she dropped the mic and they had a stare down. And some people seem to be saying they're not really digging the Becky Charlotte Ronda feud. I really enjoyed this. I really enjoyed Ronda on Raw, so it's still clicking for me. Is the feud clicking for you, Finn?
I don't know whether it really is. I don't know. I think Ronda needs to be involved. And I think they're kind of at a disadvantage when she's not there, because we've seen the Lynch versus Charlotte matches over and over. As we said on the Patreon Fastlane review, there wasn't much of a response until the very end on the Lynch-Charlotte match. So I don't know, really. I mean, I think it can improve. I think they can turn it around, but it's not really firing. It's not really like sizzling like I would like it to, if it's going to go on, if this match is going on last at WrestleMania, which many people expect that it's going to go on last at WrestleMania. Until we actually get to showtime, we have no idea. Things are often moved around. So I think these two, or rather these three, they need to be commanding the correct responses in order for Vince to greenlight this as the last match main event of WrestleMania. I think they're going to be all right next week in Chicago, because I think the fans are going to be into it. I think the fans are really going to go for it there. Hopefully they'll have something monumental lined up for Raw on Monday.
Yeah, hopefully. They've got three. How many Raws left in this WrestleMania? They've got March 18th, 25th, and then April 2nd, or whatever it is, first or second. So you've got three Raws left. So yeah, they pretty much, the three of them need to be on all the Raws from now to WrestleMania.
Yeah,
which I think they will be. So,
I think so.
Then we got Daniel Bryan, Rowan walking out of Vince's office. Kayla Braxton's asking them, you know, what were they talking about? They refused to give the game plan away. We got Samoa Joe and Andrade teaming up against Rey Mysterio and R-Truth. In the end, Joe pulls up Rey for a powerbomb, but Rey reverses it into a pinfall attempt and got the surprise victory. Joe loses it, batters R-Truth and Andrade, stares Rey down at the ramp. So it feels like maybe this is the direction of WrestleMania for the US title with these guys. And I'm not hugely against it. What do you think?
No, I mean, I'm back on board. I'm on Team Joe again. You know, I'm one of those, you know, bandwagon bitches that Rhonda referred to.
I've always said that about you, Finn. There's a T-shirt.
So I think Joe and Rey Mysterio, I think absolutely they can have a match at WrestleMania. I'm not sure how long they would get. I do worry about it. Would they get 6 minutes, 7 minutes?
Would you chuck Andrade in there or not?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like him to emerge as US champ because I think, mind you, in saying that, I don't think he's going to stay on SmackDown. I think he's going to go over to Raw. I think that's going to be his future on Raw. So if they make him US champion, that probably means he's staying on SmackDown. So I think he'd probably do better on Raw. I'm not sure about that, but I think maybe you would do. The reason I say that is Zelina Vega's married to Aleister Black, isn't she?
Yes.
So you would think that they would want Zelina Vega and Aleister Black, if Aleister Black's staying on Raw as well, to be on the same brand. So I think Andrade, if he is moving to Raw, he ain't winning the US title. That's not going to happen. So
it makes the Montreal International shakeup on April 15th and 16th even more interesting.
Yes, he does. I mean, Rey Mysterio has had a bit of a rough time at some WrestleManias where he's been given very little time in the ring. His matches have been cut short. So that's the only fear I would have, is that if it's just Rey and Samoa Joe at WrestleMania, then the match may well be a casualty of, you know, especially if Barry Manilow turns up to do Mandy Rose's entrance.
I mean, I'm so here for it. It's not even funny.
It's going to be off the kickoff for sure. We're given 3 minutes, right? There you go. You've got 3 minutes, lads. Get it done.
Listen, for Barry Manilow, you step aside. Then we got a tag match. We got Daniel Bryan and Rowan against Mustafa Ali and Kevin Owens. In the end, Rowan ends up hitting his claw thing on to get the win. The thing that I took away from this match was what's Kevin Owens going to do going forward? He kind of seems lost in the shuffle and almost like they maybe should have brought him back after WrestleMania.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, this was a bad match for Kevin Owens and for Mustafa Ali. I think they call him Rowan's finisher the Iron Claw. I'm not sure how that's going to go down when they're next in Dallas. You know, Iron Claw, of course, was the Von Erichs finisher. I'm not sure if there's any wrestling fans around who still remember the Von Erichs. But it's... It just felt like a really bad night for Mustafa Ali, who was pretty much squashed by Rowan, but he didn't come across as a star in defeat. And as you say, Kevin Owens just seems lost right now. I mean, I have no idea which direction he's going in. As we'll talk about in this moment, we're pretty sure where Daniel Bryan's going or the direction he's going, and I don't think it involves Kevin Owens.
No, I do not think so at all. So let's get to it. We get Vince McMahon coming out at the end. He walks past Brian and Rowan. He's set to present a WrestleMania opportunity to Kofi Kingston. Vince says, you know, he's there to give people what they want. He's plays in semantics, talking, you know, he never promised Kofi he'd be in the match and blah, 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 blah. He calls it a teachable moment, which brings out the New Day. They all basically have a go at Vince. You know, Big E's talking about how big Vince's ego is. Xavier saying they played by the rules, never complained. They flew halfway around the world to India and he still treats them like garbage. Kofi ends up getting a mic and being very kind of like fired up and saying, you know, he's not complaining about missing time at home, being overlooked. He's never got to take his kids trick-or-treating. Vince has never allowed anyone like him to compete for the WWE title, but he wasn't demanding a shot, he just wanted an opportunity. Which led to Vince McMahon saying, okay, and next week Kofi Kingston is going to run the gauntlet against Randy Orton, Samoa Joe, The Bar, and Rowan. And Vince said if he can beat all those men in the gauntlet match next week, he would go to WrestleMania against Daniel Bryan. The show then closed with a big brawl between the New Day and the Gauntlet guys, with the New Day's kind of, you know, getting the upper hand. What did you make of this closing segment with the New Day and Vince, and was it effective in kind of slowly building Kofi up?
Yes, I believe it was. I mean, there were some really amusing moments in it. Here, I mean, at one point, Vince uttered the words, "It's almost like I created heaven and earth." Absolutely fantastic. And then Vince revealed that when Daniel Bryan had been in to see him earlier in the show, Bryan had referred to Kofi as a B-plus player. So I thought that was a nice little nod to the Authority versus Daniel Bryan program of 5 years ago. So I thought that was really, really well done there, that they brought that back. Very appropriate. I thought Kofi was, I thought he had his best night ever on the mic here. I've always felt he was a really good guy on the mic, but never really main event material. And obviously this whole thing that's happened ever since Mustafa Ali was injured and Kofi made the substitution. We've all, I think most of us, or certainly I, but I think most of us have all viewed Kofi differently as somebody who could be a main eventer and could even be WWE champion. So I thought he did really well here. He seemed fired up. You know, Randy Orton, AJ Styles and Kofi all had tremendous nights on the mic. I mean, it's got to be an intimidating prospect going one-on-one with Vince on the mic, I would have thought. And I thought Kofi absolutely rose to the challenge here. They've stacked the odds against Kofi next week with Orton, Joe, Sheamus, Cesaro and Rowan. So he's got to beat all those guys in order to qualify for this match with Bryan at WrestleMania. I think there's going to be some shenanigans in some of those matches. I can't imagine that he's going to pin everybody. I imagine that Styles will be involved in Orton's elimination. Maybe Mysterio will be involved in Joe's elimination. I'm not quite sure how it's all going to play out, but I've got to tell you, I am really looking forward to it. So I think it's going to be a lot going on SmackDown next week. I think it's going to be a, I think it's going to be a big match. I think Kofi will succeed because who the hell else, Kenny, is Daniel Bryan going to defend against at WrestleMania? Obviously not Shawn Michaels. They rejected my proposal.
You held on to that for as long as you could, but you know, Shawn has chosen not to.
I mean, that proposal's gone down about as well as Theresa May's deal in the House of Commons.
Another defeat.
Another defeat for me as well. So I thought this segment ticked all the boxes. It did everything it set out to do. And most importantly, Kenny, it's set up next week's SmackDown. It's made next week's SmackDown unmissable.
It has, and I also think this was one of Vince's best performances in a long time as well tonight in the main event segment. I thought that, you know, I'm fully putting my hands up here. I thought the Kofi Kingston run was just a nostalgia thing. It has been taken, that's not the case anymore. He is now a legit guy that people want to see win. He's got a real story. Freddie Prinze Jr., who put a thing out on his Twitter today where he said that he'd pitched the gauntlet idea 10 years ago to creative for Kofi Kingston. And it fell on deaf ears, and he talks about how this is a real journey for Kingston because, you know, he is a guy that's been kind of tossed aside time after time after time, and he's always been the guy who's like, you know, I don't want to say he's like the Tito Santana, but in a way of like, he's always there and he's always dependable and reliable, but they never really give him any more. But Kofi's proven anytime he did get more that he's able to run with it. So I'm now all in on the journey of Kofi Kingston. So it's a testament to all of them and how well they played their roles on SmackDown.
Yeah, but I mean, Freddie Prinze Jr. may well have pitched this idea a decade ago, but Kofi Kingston wasn't ready for it then. I mean, he needed to amass this history in the company. He needed this pedigree. He needed all this stuff behind him. He needed all these disappointments for people to rally behind him. If Kingston had been pushed far beyond his station, it would have failed. So I'm sorry, Freddie Prinze Jr., but that suggestion was crap.
There you go. Fuck you, Freddie Prinze Jr. You are, prick.
it's all right saying, oh yeah, well, I said that 10 years ago. There's no way Kingston was ready for it back then. The fact that we were the worst surprised that it's got over as well as it has now in 2019 answers that question.
You know what that makes Freddie Prinze Jr., Finn?
What does he make him?
It makes him just another bandwagon bitch.
Exactly.
that's kind of the end of it for us just now on the main podcast at My Voice Is Going. So please do sign up to Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for more content, whether it's written articles from Finn, pay-per-view reviews, the Overrun where we delve into more topics and look at old issues of PowerSlam magazine and tons more. Only for the cost of between $3 and $5 a month. It is the, you know, less than the cost of a large meal at McDonald's, and you get tons of content for it, so we hope that you will go over and support us. That is what allows us to be able to keep doing these podcasts and employ people the caliber of Finn Martin, who only has made me remortgage my house twice to be able to afford his rates. Finn, where can people find you on social media or on the internet if they want to say hi?
Well, I know I'm worth it, Kenny.
You're like L'Oreal.
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter at Finlay Martin, and my website's finlaymartin.co.uk. I haven't posted anything on there for a while. I apologise. It's been a busy time, Kenny. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at KennyMC1985, inside_the ropes. Nothing really to promote too heavily right now, but when that does happen, I will do it in true Finn Martin Honky Tonk Man style and make you not be able to forget about it.
Fantastic.
So yeah, here though to play us out is the Triple H, Batista and Spice Girls hit Give Me What I Want, after Wannabe. It is so good. Finn, I look forward to getting together again next week and talking more about the journey to WrestleMania, and hopefully we will finally get a sense of who Asuka's opponent's going to be at WrestleMania.
Hopefully, yes, and hopefully we'll have some news on Barry Manilow.
The dream is not dead. Bye, everybody.
Give me what I want. Really, really want. Is that what you want? Give me what I want. Really, really want. Is that what you want? Really, really want. I want.